Good morning, Cascadia. Today is Thursday, July 20th, excuse me, 12th, 2018, and we're here at the camp again today, this morning. I'm Chris Andre. We're going to be speaking with Stuart, a longtime activist and someone who has experienced a great deal of the beginning, we might say, the genesis of this movement, which is quite different. It met and built on, of course, a lot of activism, a lot of anarchists, hard work, and over many decades. But this is in the light of America's current proto-fascist government. It has taken on a different character, as it would have to do, as we do change with the way in response to the what we're confronting right now, which is, I don't know what to call it, even proto-fascist. It likely will generate its own name at a certain point, but right now, that's as good as I can come up with. I want to know a little bit about the arrest. So you were there for the arrest. You saw some of the results. You saw some of the takedowns. It was pretty. It was pretty violent. Police probably had built up a head of steam because they had been taunted and provoked to a certain degree, but. You know, violence and force are always going to promote violence and force. There are a lot of people who are very young here and have done a lot of activism and really need. This is part of a collective signal. And I want to just quickly say one more thing, and that is free speech. We've talked about this on Air Cascadia a little bit before. Speech. The cheapest kind of speech is free. We have a right to speak our mind. But being actually heard is a different thing above all the other voices, because there's a cacophony of voices out there yelling. And I would say that the most precious and the rarest form of speech is speech that is really heard. And that, I think, is one of the many roles, one of the many faces of this radio station, KBOO. And on that note, Stuart, what happened with the arrests?
Well, first I'd like to clarify that this movement has been going on for centuries.
Oh, yes.
And this camp, of course, has inspired other occupations and actions around the country, but really we're standing on the shoulders of giants.
Yes.
As far as what happened, it was unbelievable brutality, and it's clearly visible in the videos. So we had people expressing their exercising their First Amendment rights, yelling at police, that kind of thing, and the protesters themselves just had arms locked.
This is pointless violence too. We want to emphasize they don't have a mandate to do this. They might have a mandate to arrest people for jumping off the sidewalk, but not this level of force or violence.
Well, I don't know what
incredible.
I don't know what mandates they have internally. Of course, ICE is not answerable to the Justice Department, which is outrageous.
Bingo.
And they answer to Homeland Security, who answers to the administration. We've heard that the administration feels they're being too gentle. But what we saw was outrageous. People were just linking arms, standing in protest, just civil disobedience, trying to stop a bus that was, moving immigrants that are being abused, terrorized, and so forth. There were, as you can see in the videos, thrown to the ground, but they opened fire with their automatic pepper ball guns at close range.
I was going to ask you about how close were they?
It was a foot or two in some cases, a few feet.
Tell listeners too, when we've been talking about the pepper balls that have been deployed at this action. What actually is the pepper ball? What does it consist of? What are we talking about?
It's like a little plastic ball like you'd have with a paintball gun, except it's filled with the pepper pepper gel. Uh-huh. And so
it just stick to the skin and burn.
Yeah, absolutely. And they were firing them on full auto at close range. And as our folks were released and came back into camp, we've seen the welts and the bruises and horrifically bruised and injured. One individual I talked to had it in their eyes, and that wasn't properly treated while they were detained. They just used water rather than, Maalox and water as we use to neutralize it. And so when that person got back to camp, they were still partially blinded and in extraordinary pain, had been detained for hours. And it's outrageous what was done to them. Just, they were laying on the ground. They weren't resisting. There was one person trying to pull someone out of the chaos, and they got unloaded on. This individual that I'm talking about was just laying there, and what they did to their body is just outrageous.
How did they, no pun intended, of course, target people for arrest? It always seems like certain people are singled out as arrestees.
Yes, absolutely, and I have experienced that myself on the other side of it. You're not looking at, folks aren't looking at me, but I'm an old gray white veteran. And on Monday, when police escalated and then attacked, I was right in front with other folks. I didn't get maced in the face. Other people did. At the action, yesterday in all that chaos, I slipped in and pulled a couple people out. I didn't get shot with pepper balls. Other people did. So, for example, on Monday when the police were escalating, all we did, we just had five people down on the sidewalk, four or five, just holding signs on McAdams. And DHS, every time we did that, would come out and say very aggressively, move or be arrested, move or be arrested. Well, that's a public sidewalk. So just a few of us came out with cameras. Rather than attack me, rather than attack those people, they grabbed a transgendered woman on the corner.
Sure.
And then later, as that escalated, grabbed another transgendered person and then a non-binary person, right? Not the old gray veteran.
That's just, it's so awful, it's funny. So we have this brand new, insanely powerful, not apparently accountable to anyone, theoretically accountable to the administration, but then we still have yet to determine who this administration is itself accountable to. That's a question that somebody could get into. But the idea that they're capable of establishing targets from already marginalized communities, when that's in fact what this is all really in some ways all about. What I wanted to talk to you also about today on that same point is apparently they've reunited. They were supposed to start on Tuesday, and they've done 56. Reunifications so far. If they can't do this, I don't understand how they expect to reunify North and South Korea, just for starters. But 56 out of God knows how many, the numbers seem to change, and they really don't have any idea how many, which gives you a bit of a chill when you think, well, so we have, ever since 9/11, this Department of Homeland Security, which itself sounds like some sort of National Socialist Nazi type of an agency. The word homeland was never used, never occurred in government offices before 9/11. So now we have this thing, which apparently has almost virtually limitless powers, and they have laws. They're responsible for watching out for terrorists and so forth. So how are they supposed to do that? They've lost children in this country in a relatively brief amount of time. They've lost thousands of people, And this seems to be okay. It's like we've done 56 and the rest of them, well, you know, there's various problems. Who really are they accountable to? What have you seen?
To me, there is no accountability other than within their own hierarchy. And
it's a rogue agency of this government, right?
Right, and yeah. You know, perhaps acting on the wishes of their, you know, billionaire funders that, you know, are bribing our politicians.
They're
so
essentially a private police force that in when push comes to shove will protect the 1%, right?
Yeah, absolutely. That's why the police are there. You'll notice around the country, you know, police cars used to say protect and serve, and in most cities they don't anymore. They'll talk about justice or, you know, use words like that. But really even with protect and serve, it's to protect the rich and their property.
Yeah. Exactly. And though it seems though this movement, we're all involved in right here, and I myself would say I don't have the depth of understanding that I should like to have, but I can see one thing, and that is that we have to get over the idea that the parents are responsible for all of this. We're all responsible for all these children, and indeed we are all responsible for one another. And if there's nothing else that is to be gained from this, that is in itself is extremely powerful. Can you talk a little bit about this encampment and give people who are listening right now an audio image of the camp, how it grew?
Sure. So I missed the first 2 days at the camp. So this started with some really, really bold, brave people who came here for a vigil. And then
who selected this area, this particular area, and thought, okay, this is a relatively safe. We can invite, we can ask people to come down here and join us.
Yes, and I don't know the planning that went into that or how that came about. I know the intent was to disrupt the operations of the building, and so they, you know, blocked the driveway, blocked the entrances, and that took a lot of bravery for such a small group of people. 2 days later, the call came out: we need help, we need bodies, and that was because employees were still in the building. They were welcome to leave, but they just their cars were blocked, and so I came in and witnessed what happened. Homeland Security and Portland Police came in force. We thought they were raiding us, but they drove right past our barricade and acted like it was a big hostage rescue to get these employees out. They were clearly
they probably already had the theme music with that dum 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 dum.
Yes,
you know, yeah.
Right. And they were, you know, clearly some of them afraid. One of the agents that came out, actually, you can see on video, had their hand on had his hand on his gun as he walked out of the building, walking. You know, there were protesters yelling, you know, shame, shame, that sort of thing. But it's unbelievable.
And the other thing that I'm very curious about, and I can't really find an answer to, is do we have any idea how many? I mean, I think this is a demonstration of the might of Homeland Security deployed against civilian population. But we don't know how many there actually are. I heard on Teresa's program, she said that there's a parking garage, 4 stories underground. That's a hell of a lot of cars, huh? I mean, that's a fairly large force, and these are not regular police either. They are Homeland Security. We really have as a population, as communities, questioned Homeland Security as much as we should. It's not easy. What have you found out? In addition to what you just told us, is there anything else you think that listeners should know about this force deployed apparently against us?
Yes, yeah, and of course there's a lot of secrecy, a lot we don't know. To your point about, you know, underground, I had my tent in front of the garage door blocking that, and through the garage door I could see they have 4 doors inside. You know, we've seen times where like 40 vehicles go into that building.
Official or unofficial? I guess it's all official, huh?
Yeah. So there's employees in private cars, and there's federal vehicles and such. But there's a lot of movement, during the day. So presumably they've got a lot of space underground.
And that means that they're going in and out from here. That means that they're out and about around Portland. Begs the question, what are they up to? I'm very curious about that. And you mentioned the secrecy under which they operate. That should definitely ring some bells for people. Being aware of who they are, where they are. I saw a creature that I would have identified as Homeland Security when I parked. But then I parked illegally, so, there's something in that. It's about time for us to take a little break. Stay with us, Stuart. This is a KBOO Portland, your community radio station, a voice in the community, of the community, for the community. And we're broadcasting here live at the Occupy Camp, where we are speaking out in support of people whose families and therefore their identities are being crushed under the boot heel of the Trump administration. And we are, I guess, interrogating ourselves and finding out what we know about the Department of Homeland Security, what we don't know, why the secrecy, and another thing, too, I want to ask you about. In all of these movements, and you said going back centuries, indeed, there are moles, there's people, there are informants. Is there any, what's your sense of that type of activity here in this particular camp?
We're quite certain that that we have moles in camp. We don't know who that is. We know we're under under heavy surveillance, Homeland Security, FBI, that sort of thing. But we're just operating under that, that assumption that we're always being listened to, that there are people here agitating, people trying to disrupt, and that there are folks that, blend in, that are hard to identify.
Isn't it odd, don't you think, that we do have a right to free speech? We are sometimes, we're heard and sometimes even listened to. And at the same time, there are those who are listening to us for reasons that in some cases we don't know. In other cases, we're pretty sure it can and will be used against us in a court of law. Again, the police state is a constant, I think, in everybody's mind. Certainly, the immigrants, the people who innocently stumbled into this hell, and how would we go about? One other thing I think is very important to ask, important for listeners to ask, is how do we plan to get out of this? Clearly, this administration is only capable of wielding a clumsy force, just a blunt force, and that's not going to reunite people. That's not going to address the question of why we even have ICE. And at this point in history, the evolution of communications and the scale that we're seeing right now, why we have borders for that matter. I mean, isn't that a little silly, the line, I mean, why is it there? If you think about it, there's no reason for it at all, right?
No, absolutely not. They're just arbitrary lines drawn by white men in history. And, there's, I think it's outrageous. I'd like to point out, there's a lot of focus on this administration, but this administration is not the problem. It's a symptom of the problem. And, perhaps a different president might focus on reuniting families, to help with that one issue, but it doesn't end, all of the surveillance, as you talked about, the militarization, the really corruption of all levels of democracy, the legalized bribery of our elected supposed representatives, on and on. Trump and crew are that's something that's been produced by this system, and eliminating that doesn't fix much. We could make things a little better in some ways.
Well, it's the irony too is here's Trump embarrassing everybody, and for starters, embarrassing the entire United States at the NATO summit, and crying like a baby about the cost and that others should do their share. Well, let's talk about how much it costs to run this, you know, national security state. This is a big. This building is huge. They got four stories of underground parking, for God's sake. They could be a mall. They could be a misery mall. But who's, you know, it takes a lot of money to be able to afford that kind of thing. Just to build the parking lot, for starters, and the salaries, all these people, all of this equipment, all of the helicopter, sending a helicopter up every day, that's not free. So you know, the cost of running it, and because it's so compartmentalized, you know, broken up and fragmented, you know, it's like a mare's nest of Venn diagrams. How do you ever figure out where money is going? They just seem to be pouring money into this.
Yeah, it's clearly a priority. You know, after we were...
But who's funding it? There's a lot of money.
Yes.
Oligarchs?
Well,
I don't know.
I think we all are,
yeah,
frankly.
We are, but there's... I don't know. Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, so, you know, back to your point about, you know, what are all these people doing coming in out of the building? What are they doing outside the building? When we got raided, that was about a week and a half into this, and they retook the ICE building. At that point, they had dozens of officers outside, more inside, and I was somewhat happy about that in the sense that they aren't somewhere else hurting people. Well, now they've changed tactics, and you can see on the video.
No, they're hurting people.
There were not a lot of officers there, agents there that came out and dealt with this. The way they dealt with it was by escalating the level of violence. So by opening fire on, you know, peaceful protesters, they've just got, you know, we don't have weapons, and they have high-tech weaponry and high-tech training and so on. And so that's been their solution to free up officers for doing whatever else they're doing. So.
Who, God knows how much it costs to pay Mossad to train these people. I mean... These are the techniques that we see. I mean, unless an average citizen is curious and has taken a look at what Mossad's operations look like and what their tactics look like, you wouldn't think of a resemblance. And indeed, there's probably quite a few of the whatever it is. 35% of people who support Trump that would be, yes, good, Israeli guys are going to teach us how to, you know, God, geez, I just about said a word. it's a classic, you say that like it's a good thing. So the tactics, how are they different? We mentioned the centuries that resistance has been going on in many different forms. I mean, you know, you look at the Greek plays, where this is the classics now, right? You know, Lysistrata and all this, and Aristophanes and the frogs and Brekkikekex, Koax, and all that business. It's like, wow, you're so cultured and everything. But a lot of it was resistance. A lot of it was making fun of power. And even going further. So how would you want to characterize this new face? Have we evolved enough? Has the resistance evolved enough to confront this type of what do you want to call it? I hate the idea that it's going to that we're literally at war with ourselves, but it sure looks like it. I've been talking about civil war for a long time. It's something that worries me. So how have we evolved?
Well, I think the resistance is constantly evolving, and you know, this is an example of, you know, what happened here, something new, something different. So there's been other occupations, you know, like Occupy Wall Street, Standing Rock, where, you know, things like that. But in this case, I mean, we are taking on this monstrosity of just power without oversight, not from the people of this country, certainly. And so what I see is that we will continue to evolve. We will continue to try new tactics and different ways to disrupt and to, you know, help people understand what's going on and what we're up against, and creatively find ways to really put the pressure on.
How will it end?
My crystal ball isn't worth a darn. All I know is that, speaking for myself and the folks I've talked to here, we're not going away. If they push us out, we're coming back. We're gonna come back here. We're gonna come, you know, set up somewhere else. We're just gonna keep at it.
That's what it might look like. Get down here. Be part of this. This is something. You know, what do you want to do? Well, your children are going to say, you see the children again. I think it's like, Mom, Dad, what did you do? Were you down there? What was it like? Did you stand up for children the same age as us when you had an opportunity to do that, to make your voice heard on our behalf, on behalf of all the children? Were you there?
Well, and there's been a lot of discussion around that pre-Nazi Germany, right? Why didn't people stand up? Why didn't you do something? And this is our opportunity to stand up, to try and stop this monstrosity from growing and getting worse. And that's what'll happen if we do nothing. You know, I feel like we're spiraling down a hole. And if we don't do something, we have a democracy in name. Our Constitution is a joke in terms of how it's treated and respected. They just basically do what they want. We have, you know, several million people in prison who are, you know, working for slave labor wages. And, you know, everything that I see is just moving in a bad direction.
Yeah, all the symbols are there. It's all there. The writing is ha ha, it's on the wall, isn't it? And the wall hasn't even been built yet, except that it has, in many respects, it's going up right now. I'm Chris Honore for KBOO Community Radio, your voice in this contest. I'm speaking with Stuart, longtime activist. Thank you so much for that, Stuart. Don't forget, get the facts. You know your rights. Get the facts. Take a stand. And get down here right away. The more people, together, the stronger we all are.
Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with the requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements for the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available by calling the station at 503-231-8032. Meetings will be held at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon, unless otherwise noted.
This is Cat Meow.
And this is Becky.
And we want to hang out with you.
The Development Committee will meet the third Wednesday of every month at 7 p.m.
We're traffic informed and
food motivated.
And we're seeking like-minded individuals who want to use their rad fundraising skills and talents to
support the station. Join us.
Join us.
You are listening to 90.7 KBOO Portland. Coming up this morning at 11 on Between the Covers, interviews with local authors. At 11:30 on Words and Pictures, ahead of Gus Van Sant's new film, Don't Worry, He Won't Get Far on Foot, we reprise a 2005 conversation with celebrated Portland cartoonist John Callahan. But next, it's Flashpoints with Dennis Bernstein. And all of these programs are made possible by member support. If you'd like to become a member, go to kboo.fm and click on Donate.
Say that this building should not be leased to ICE and that the people should not be detained here in the city of Portland.
So, you know, the Human Rights Commission in Portland, how busy could they possibly be that this is not a priority? This would be, I would expect, a priority.
And so I think we're probably out of time for this broadcast, but we have a web page on the KBOO website, kboo.fm/OccupyICE. If you go to the front page and you see KBOO live from Occupy ICE, you can go there for updates, all of the broadcasts that we're doing from down here, and we're also doing webcasts that are on our web stream only. Those are archived there. We're also doing transcripts for people who are hearing impaired who would like to see the interviews. One of the things that's been really exciting about this camp is the inclusivity, especially of people with disabilities, of people who are marginalized. The vigils have all been ADA interpreted with the ASL interpreted with the American Sign Language interpreters here at every event that's held in the camp. And so they've asked us also to do transcripts of any interviews that we do.
In Spanish?
And in Spanish, we have already a broadcast up in Spanish, and we are putting that transcript up as well. So that should be up today. So kboo.fm/OccupyICE.
This is Chris Andre for KBOO Portland. We're signing off now. Get the facts. Know your rights. Take a stand. Thanks for listening, and come on down.